Quick question. If I told you that 82% of adults with ADHD are still being bullied, not as kids, right now, as adults, would you be surprised? Or would you be like, yeah, that sounds about right? Today's guest, Brooke Schnittman, did the research and has the receipts, including her own story, which spans decades. This one is going to land somewhere deep. Stay with me. I'm honestly shocked and surprised and more than a little sad about it, because based on what we are about to get into, including your own personal lived experience, most kids with ADHD get bullied, and that bullying doesn't go away once they become grownups. It continues in a variety of forms and has a lot of effects on how they feel and how they function. Where shall we start?
So in the general population, like 10 to 20% of people are bullied in childhood, and then it's reduced in half when they become adults. The research out there that I had seen before I did my own survey was that 47% of children with ADHD get bullied. So that's more than half, right? So I was curious about adults because my story is very ingrained in this. Unfortunately, I was bullied for almost all of my life. And from ages 8 to 35, I was bullied. I was spit on. I had, you know, nails dug into me, emotionally abused, physically abused. I assumed I was too sensitive, right? Too intense, too disorganized, too much. But I didn't connect it to ADHD because I didn't fully understand my own wiring at the time. And I also didn't know I had ADHD. So not only was I bullied by children, I was bullied by teachers. And then when I moved into the professional realm, I was also bullied professionally. So to me, I always thought that there was something wrong with me internally. Like it was a condition of me. I went to therapy on and off my whole life. I got diagnosed with anxiety, and I would talk about the anxious thoughts even more, but I didn't really have the tools or know what was going on with my brain. So I further internalized everything. Yeah. So of course, because I further internalized it, then I got more anxious, stress. And then at one point I was diagnosed with low-grade depression. So yeah, I just didn't have the awareness. So as I began working with adults with ADHD and even within my own ADHD family, I started hearing the same patterns over and over again. Different careers, different family systems, different personalities, but the same thread of chronic criticism, exclusion, being misunderstood, or subtly undermined. So it started feeling to me like it was systemic. So again, I looked for the research out there, and there was nothing on adults with ADHD and bullying. So I launched this survey in 2025 to see whether this was just a cluster of stories in my practice or whether this was a broader pattern. And when over 90% reported childhood bullying and 82%,
wow.
82% reported adult bullying, it confirmed what so many of us had experienced quietly. So we know this isn't just an individual weakness. This is recurring misunderstandings and power dynamics around ADHD traits.
Now, bullying is a term that obviously everyone has heard. But so many of us, because we think we're the problem, don't recognize or label what we're experiencing as bullying, either in childhood or adulthood. And for some people listening now, they may think, yeah, I have ADHD. Yeah, I had some challenges in childhood. Was I bullied? I don't know. So let's talk about what kinds of, and obviously the spitting and poking you with nails and name calling and all that. I think almost anyone can agree. Yeah, it sounds like bullying to me. But what are some of the more subtle forms that those of us with ADHD experience starting in childhood that are a direct result of our ADHD traits?
Yeah. So you mentioned what happened to me in childhood, which was very overt. So it was obvious, right? Like that you can't not see someone digging their nails into you, right? That's obviously bullying. But then in childhood, I know you asked me about more covert, but we see more covert like bullying in adulthood. So you hit the nail on the head. You said bullying still exists, but it changes forms. So it's not as obvious in adulthood in many of the cases. So what is bullying? First of all, ADHD or not, bullying is repeated targeted behavior, and it involves a power imbalance and causes harm where the person being targeted has difficulty defending themselves. So there has to be three core elements. There has to be repetition. So it's not a one-time conflict or bad interaction or coercion. It has to happen over time or as a pattern. So examples are ongoing criticism, repeated exclusion, chronic jokes at someone's expense, consistent undermining, and then in adulthood, micromanagement, consistent micromanagement. There's also a power imbalance, that second piece that I mentioned, which is one person or a group where they have more power than the victim. So this in either case could be a teacher. Unfortunately, I've been bullied by my teacher in fourth grade. Happy to share stories. Would rather not, but I am happy to. Also by parents, by your boss as an adult. There's social power, which is status, popularity, group dynamics, emotional leverage, dependency, manipulation. We know that that happens very often with ADHD, where we become dependent and we get manipulated and gaslighted easily. Or in a very neurodivergent case, there's a systemic advantage. So the neurotypical norms compared to the neurodivergent traits. So that imbalance makes it really hard for the target to stop the behavior. And then the third thing is harm. So the behavior causes emotional, psychological, social, professional harm. And the intent doesn't matter because it's really about the impact.
Okay, so I have a follow-up question for that, because this is like, okay, then bullying is the persistence, it is the pattern, it is the power imbalance, and there has to be harm. And the harm is not necessarily intended, although most cases it is. It's harm as experienced by
the victim.
Mm-hmm. With respect to the power imbalance, does that mean when there are peers, school-age kids, same grade, same age, there technically isn't a power imbalance there. One's not an adult and the other is a child. So if the kids are in the same age group, is there a power imbalance?
Oh, 100%.
Simply because
social power.
Social power.
Right.
Okay.
So look, we all know who the popular kids were in school, right?
Sure did. Everybody knew.
We don't know how they became popular. They just called them popular. And one day they were the popular kids, right? Yep. So that is what we're talking about as far as if kids are the same age, status, popularity, even emotional leverage. Like if someone manipulates you, you can be manipulated with someone the same age. And also you have your neurotypical friends who don't understand neurodivergent traits because perhaps they weren't informed about it. We know invisible disabilities, you can't see them most of the time, especially in women when they're masking. And very often as a child with ADHD, we didn't know we had ADHD. So we gaslight ourselves, right? And we tried to fit into the neurotypical ways, but it didn't make sense because that's not who we were to the core.
Yeah, I'm thinking back, and we're not going to go down the rabbit hole of comparing stories, but I'm just thinking, I've shared this on the podcast before about being so eager to answer questions in class because things were moving too slow for me and I was bored AF. So as soon as I knew what question the teacher was answering, my hand would shoot up in the air because, you know, that's how I was keeping myself stimulated and interested. And she said to me, "Diane, put your hand down. Let's give others a chance." And I literally felt, I just felt the rush of blood to my face.
Sure,
I was
so ashamed. Never called that again or raised your hands.
Well, I did, unfortunately, but the, you know, kids were laughing and stuff. But I'm just thinking, you know, how many people are bullied by teachers, by parents, by babysitters, by grandparents, and sadly, and I'm sure you heard this in your survey, by parents who had ADHD as well, whether they knew it or not. Just like the irony. Yeah.
Yeah. And going back to your teacher's story, I guess I'll share mine while we're at it. In fourth grade, I was new to the public school system and I was in private school. My dad owned a school growing up, so I went to his school. And then my neighborhood friends went to the public school. So for so long, I wanted to be in with them because I only saw them during camp or, you know, on the weekends, whatever. So I begged him to go to public school. Finally, he said, okay, let's do it. Fourth grade, middle of elementary school. So first day, they all hid at the bus stop. He told me this. I don't even remember this part. So none of them wanted me.
The other kids hid from you at the bus stop?
Correct. So first day, fourth grade school, they hid at the bus stop. So I couldn't see them. But in fourth grade, fast forward to the teacher situation, I tried so hard to fit in to the point where I just shrunk because I would call out or I'd raise my hand or I'd go up to the desk because that's what I thought you could do. I did it in private school, but I also didn't realize it was a part of my impulsivity. And I remember doing everything I could to keep up academically, socially, emotionally. And one time, this is just an example, I studied so hard for a spelling test. I was the only one who got a perfect score on the spelling test. But she decided on that day that she was going to take 20 points off my test and its new rule because I didn't put my name on it. So I got an 80 on the test, new rule, and she announced it to the class. Brooke didn't put her name on the test.
Oh, God, help me.
And now if you, moving forward, don't put your name on the test, on the spelling test, you are going to get your, but new rule. Again, it wasn't the beginning of fourth grade.
They all got warned.
Correct.
You had it applied retroactively.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. There were more. Well, that's not even a micro.
There were many more incidents of this, and she knew who the popular kids were. Yeah, so I didn't have that support in fourth grade. So I will always remember her. I won't mention her name, but her name is ingrained in me. Yeah.
You know, what I'm reminded of, Brooke, is that you've probably had people tell you, wow, I admire you so much. You're so resilient. And I've heard that plenty too. And I think, oh, honey, if you had any idea how I earned that. I mean, you earn your resilience by getting knocked down 100 times and getting up 101. And it's, I don't recommend it. It's nice to be resilient. It sucks ass that you have to be bullied.
It sucks ass
to get there.
And also, your nervous system still suffers the consequences. So I know you know this, you know, your past career was psychology, and I dissociated for so long, just tried to move forward in whatever life period I was to just keep up and try to fit in. And none of my friends as adults knew that I was bullied for the majority of my life because I never spoke about it. Now that I'm opening the wounds again to the world about this story, it is equally as raw. I've done EMDR, IFS, all of the things. So like resiliency is still there, but it doesn't mean it hurts any less.
I think that's a really important point to make because as two ADHD coaches who also have ADHD and are managing our nervous systems at all times while helping other people do the same, you get better at these things, but they never go away. And if your life gets suddenly disrupted, you can very easily lose temporarily the skill that you've developed in managing all these things and literally feel like you're resetting the clock back to when you had no knowledge and no skills.
Yeah. The biggest lie that I used to tell myself, I definitely gaslit myself, but the biggest lie I used to tell myself was that if I didn't feel, then I'm okay. If I didn't feel upset, if I didn't feel hurt, then I was fixed.
Yeah.
So then once I started feeling again, I was like, oh my God, I've regressed. Like, what the heck? Like, I just would rather dissociate. But no, you cannot heal. You cannot work on yourself unless you feel.
You cannot heal what you cannot feel. I'm really glad that you brought up the dissociation, Brooke, because we're going to unpack some other things that folks talk about quite a bit. The masking, the hiding, the shrinking, the fading, the rejection sensitivity, all the ways we try to make ourselves more tolerable, more acceptable, or at least a little bit less annoying and obnoxious so that people don't target us. Mm-hmm. But dissociation is probably on the menu for quite a few people who are experiencing such acute emotional pain that that's their most potent survival strategy. You just literally opt out and go to your safe place in your head while appearing to be present to everyone else because it's the safest and sanest thing you could possibly do in the moment.
And it worked. It had to work. So dissociation definitely has its place and its time. And I still dissociate now. Like you said, it's a survival mechanism. Luckily, I dissociate less. But yes, what else is there when you are constantly bombarded by trauma?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people talk about dissociation as dysfunctional. Oh, I think it's incredibly functional. Now, when it becomes dysfunctional is when we become overly reliant on it so that nothing else helps. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the things that are much more frequently discussed, the masking and the rejection sensitivity and burnout, because all you're going to have to do, and people with ADHD are really good at recognizing patterns and connecting dots. To me, it's like you start with bullying, you learn to mask, your rejection sensitivity is evidence that your nervous system still operates and it's often on high alert and the inevitable result, in addition to acquiring those extra diagnoses of anxiety and depression on your way to finding out you have ADHD, my story as well. There's no way you're not going to eventually burn out. It's inevitable.
That's an amazing question. And it hits nervous system, my nervous system right now as well. But chronic bullying keeps our brain in threat mode, right? Freeze, fight, flight, fawn, fib. So when our nervous system...
Oh, fib? Oh, you added an... Wait a minute. Hold on.
Five Fs.
There's another... Girl, I collect Fs, okay? I love the...
But
I
you
love
don't
me
give
some
an
Fs.
F, so you just
well,
collect
that's
them?
True.
You don't give them?
You know me. No. I have a whole jar of Fs in case I run out. No, it's like trauma response. Mm-hmm. It used to be originally back in the day, fight or flight. Then some folks realized, oh, that's not... Neither one is an option, so I'll freeze. And when that's not an option, fawn can at least help me stay safe. But girl, you just added a fifth and you said fib.
Which so many of ADHD kids especially do.
Yeah.
Right?
And adults.
And adults, of course.
Yes.
But as a parent and as a former special ed teacher, right? I used to take offense to lying, but I do know where it comes from. That was... sometimes my trauma response, but mostly it was freeze or fawn or flight. When I had a car, my friends called me MIA all the time. But anyway, seriously, I would just jump from group to group.
I have to credit
you. Oh my gosh. I couldn't get too close with anyone. I was just playing tennis with my tennis friends, basketball with my basketball friends, and they were all surface level relationships. Then I had my core friends and I had a group of friends who ditched me and excluded me because they wanted to become friends with my ex-boyfriend who was the popular kid. And so I just jumped from group to group. That was my life. But back to your question, when your nervous system is scanning all the time, for criticism, rejection, we know that we don't feel safe and our executive function suffers. And when that happens,
absolutely,
you can't learn in school. And then think about what happens from an adult perspective too, if you're in the workplace and you don't feel safe and then your boss is talking to you and you already are having your executive function issues of working memory or sustained attention, and then you don't feel safe, so your executive function is literally shut down. Well, then your motivation drops, then your confidence erodes, and then follow through becomes so much harder. And that's because your system is completely overloaded. So you talk about hypervigilance with ADHD and yes, noticing everything. Well, it's because we're so freaking hypervigilant.
You're right. We do notice everything because we live deathly afraid that we're going to forget something, or at least we're going to forget the most important thing, or who said it to us, or what we promised to do. And honestly, we're terrorizing ourselves and always waiting for the other shoe to drop. Always. It's exhausting.
It's absolutely really exhausting.
Really, really exhausting. But I have a really important question for you, because you've studied this. You didn't just do the survey. And when I say just, I'm not minimizing it. I think it was fucking awesome that
Thank you.
Especially when I'm like, why hasn't anyone else done this, for God's sake? But you also did the deep dive face plant, follow your curiosity, classic ADHD, of studying all the research on bullying apart from ADHD. What I find myself wondering, Brooke, is a lot of the things you've been talking about, like the superficial friend groups and moving from one group to the other, and absolutely true of me, and living in fear of making a mistake, doing the wrong thing, forgetting the thing, all those things. How much of those do you think are experiences of people with ADHD who weren't bullied? Like, I want to get to the nuance, the extra layer of struggle. Is it simply that, not simply, is it that people who grew up with ADHD have all of these overactive nervous system, impaired executive functioning, intensity, forgetfulness, all the, those things do damage to how we feel and how we function, period. Help me understand the nuance of what bullying adds to the mix. Does it make masking more permanent? Does it make rejection sensitivity more intense? Does it have a bigger impact on our ability to be employed? Like, help me understand that.
Yeah. So let's start at childhood. So when ADHD children are corrected by adults, for instance, they might hear things like stop talking, pay attention, why can't you sit still, raise your hand. The peers then absorb that messaging. And if a teacher constantly singles out a child, then the other kids may see that child as the problem child. And then that label can legitimize, not really, but it legitimizes the bullying to the other children. So now you're not only walking around with a label of ADHD, if you happen to know you have ADHD, but now you're walking around as I'm the problem. And so when we outwardly maybe took up more space than our peers because maybe we were louder, more impulsive, or, you know, raising our hands more than the other kids, now we're shrinking. We have the biggest fear of taking up space. I know that that was very much a part of my story. Like, I did not even want to be named. I didn't want to be seen. I didn't want to be noticed. If I just did that, then there would be no problem.
Yeah.
So because of that in childhood, you get socially stunted. Because if you don't communicate and have friends, then how do you learn social skills? You don't, right? We and you mentioned nuances, right? We already miss social cues in the neurodivergent population, and now we have no practice. And then we have the rejection sensitivity that comes into play, where after we say one thing, I know I still do it to this day, we're replaying the conversation over months later. Why the heck did I say that, right? So in childhood, it looks like shrinking. In adulthood, it could look like shrinking, but it also looks like overworking as adults, trying to hide any bit of not being equal playing field or being different. So for me, it looked like showing up when the assistant principal came in the morning and leaving with the custodians every day. so I could take that extra time and get my lesson plans in and be creative and be the best teacher, because that's all I was able to identify with. And if people gave me positive reinforcement for how hard I worked, then that just fueled the fire even more. Like, okay, this is how I identify. This is the one good thing I have going on. That's what I am. I am an overachiever and I'm a hard worker. I can't lose that.
At least I can do that. Now, I may not have friends and,
right.
You know,
I don't have a dating life. I don't have substantial relationships, yeah. But I can outwork anyone.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody make that connection before, Brooke. And the connection between being othered with or without bullying, but absolutely with bullying, we are desperately searching for something that we can be good at. That is obvious to everyone around us. And in the overworking, overcompensating scenario you've just described, it's not necessarily that we're better at the job than anyone else. It's that no one works harder to be good enough at it. And no one can take that from you, because they all see that when they come in, you were already there.
Exactly.
On your third cup of coffee. And when they leave, you're still there, burrowed in like a tick.
Yep.
And yeah, then they talk shit about you, like,
oh, she's,
you know,
such a,
rolls
you
in
know,
on
brown
Monday
noser,
morning,
so, hey. People pleaser.
Yeah.
I remember when.
How was your weekend, Brooke? Oh, I bet you spent it here.
Meanwhile,
you know?
They all took my lesson plans, right? Because why not? Right? Here you go. Here's like the people pleasing. Oh, you're rolling in at the time school starts. Here's the lesson plan for you today. I remember when I left a school district that I really liked to get an assistant director of special education job in a different district. My boss congratulated me at the final meeting and said, I emailed Brooke at 2 a.m. and she emailed me back at 2:03 a.m. That's how hard of a worker she is. It was because I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep.
But damn, you know what you're reminding me is that in all the ways that we learn to mask and hide and shrink, that's on the minimizing side. On the maximizing side, the overworking, the overcompensating, the people pleasing, the doing things for other people that they could just as well do for themselves, but at least they can't hate on us because we've ingratiated ourselves to them to some degree. All of that stuff is very, I don't want to say addicting, very habit forming.
Yes.
And really hard once you realize, well, this is dysfunctional and I don't have a life. And so what if I'm the best person here? I'm getting paid exactly the same as the rest of these losers. I imagine it's really, really hard to, what am I saying? Imagine. I know.
Yeah.
I'm not imagine. I know how hard it is to wean yourself off of this. Even when you get your ADHD diagnosis, you understand the origin of these traits, you understand the connection with the bullying, and you're like, oh, no fucking wonder I'm this overachiever, overcompensating.
Yep.
But to be able to then start to dismantle that and unlearn that, I mean, that's some serious work.
It is serious work. And, you know, I thought I had it all together when I was single and I first became an ADHD coach and had my structure, had my tennis, had my scheduled clients, built a team, right? I was like, yep, I got this ADHD thing figured out.
Yeah.
But just kidding. Met my husband. Met my two stepsons who all got diagnosed with ADHD, had a toddler. Now I'm almost 42. So you can imagine what's going on in my body, lack of sleep, hormones, right? So it's like, oh, just kidding. You think you have this figured out, but now you need to relearn everything or do it differently. So with the changes of ADHD progress, you can see the maladaptive behaviors coming out again, and you can catch yourself and be like, oh, wait a second, I'm unmasking, but this behavior isn't serving me. But you can only do that, and we can only grow and evolve in our ADHD if we reflect, which is something that we typically aren't ingrained in doing.
Well, we would much prefer to be looking at the windshield and the road ahead rather than the rearview mirror and the road behind, because usually, thinking back in the past, it's not like, oh, I did all these amazing things. It's like, oh, it would have been nice to have known I had ADHD before I made that decision. Or, oh, if only I hadn't said, did, whatever. So I think it's why I feel so strongly about embracing radical self-acceptance before you start digging in to your self-awareness, because that can be quite treacherous. And you have to know going in, it has to be safe to learn more about yourself through the ADHD lens, or you just won't do it. It's one of the reasons why a lot of people, they know they're ADHD, but they're not going to get diagnosed because they don't want it to be official, because then they're going to live up or down to whatever preconceived notions they have that are associated with the condition. And if they've been bullied, can you really blame them for wanting to avoid anything that is going to trigger old trauma?
100%. For me, and I see that this a lot with my clients too, the talk therapy didn't work. It made me more anxious. We already talked about that. When I got coached, I didn't even know I had ADHD, but I was getting coaching tools to help me execute things over a long period of time. I had community. I did have some level of self-awareness. I was able to separate facts from stories. So I learned all the basic tools. And that was the first time that I had a bit of confidence that, oh my God, I can do this. There are people who like me. I can move forward. I can see a path. I can execute things over a long period of time. And it wasn't until that, then I could go back and do the deeper work, to your point, of doing IFS, EMDR, and going deep. And I would definitely agree, when someone's in chaos or survival mode, don't ask why you're doing something. Just do micro actions, do 1% action, get yourself moving forward, start building momentum, start feeling confident, and then go back and do the deeper work.
Absolutely. I want to know, from your survey, was there anything that the people who filled it out shared with you that surprised you? Because you have, by that time, you've done a lot of your own research. You have all your lived experience to inform you. What was surprising about the results of the research? What did people share with you that you were like, huh, I didn't expect that?
So what surprised me the most was that, and I think I said this before, but that in the general population, bullying decreases by 50%. So it goes from 20% to 10%. And in the ADHD population, I saw that it went from 90% to 82%. And out of the people who filled out this survey, there were 162 people, there were 70% who were bullied both in childhood and adulthood. So bullying did not go away. It just changed forms again. But also on top of that, 63% of the adults who got bullied in this survey were seeing this in the workplace. And then 54% was in relationships. So I've had people ask me like, oh, there's bullying, cyberbullying everywhere, right? Like, you know, I'm sure that's the highest number that you see. No, it wasn't. The people who filled out this survey were getting bullied in other places, and that is what they identify their bullying in. So again, 63% in the workplace, 54% in relationships, and only 14.2% online as adults.
This resonates with my lived experience and with the lived experience of the clients I've worked with over many, many years, initially as a psychotherapist working with adults with ADHD, and in the last decade as a business coach working with entrepreneurs with ADHD. I think it's frankly one of the reasons why, one of the many reasons why folks with ADHD tend to become self-employed. Because the workplace is inhospitable for folks who are neurodivergent.
The data out there, I don't know if it's changed, but the latest that I heard was 30% of entrepreneurs have ADHD. But I would assume it's over 50%, because every time I go into a room of entrepreneurs and I say what I do, more than half of them raise their hands saying, oh, I have ADHD.
Yeah. There are a lot of different research reports. Some say as low as 30%. I've seen as high as 60%. But since the pandemic in particular, and the fact that people can work exclusively online, they don't have to have a brick and mortar, I definitely think the number's trending up. I would agree with
you. Yeah, You feel in the workplace, you had mentioned the fact that we become entrepreneurs so much because it's literally suffocating sometimes to be in the workplace, especially in a workplace where A, you don't understand you have ADHD, so other people don't, or B, you do understand you have ADHD, but other people don't understand ADHD or don't care to really treat you the way that you should be treated. So then, you know, in the workplace, yeah, we're looking at micromanagement, being labeled too much, gaslighting, social exclusion. I heard from several people in the survey that they were not invited to gatherings in the workplace. And this is not just like going to the bar. This is like professional gatherings. They were not invited. So this exclusion continued in the workplace. And again, if you don't feel safe, well, okay, you're not going to perform and then your ADHD symptoms are just going to be exacerbated and there really is no hope, right? You could have all of the tools and coaching in the world, but there are just some environments that you literally need to exit because you are driving yourself into the wall. And then there's workplaces where they undermine credibility. It's subtle, it's professional, it's intimate. So when the difference very often isn't understood, then it gets corrected. And when it doesn't change, then it gets punished.
Oh, that's heavy. Yeah. We can't end this interview.
No.
We have to have some good news because you are a success story.
Thank you.
In not turning around your bullying, but like eventually coming to the point where you realized, oh, yes, I am different. And that attracted the wrong kind of attention to me. And the adults in the environment did not address it in a responsible way. And it continued. And I internalized it. And it led to anxiety, depression, dissociation, and so on and so forth. Your ADHD diagnosis obviously had a domino effect, talking to other people about their experience of bullying, doing the survey, doing the research. Where do we take all of this and go from here for our own personal healing, for our own personal understanding? Because this is not just an individual problem or even a problem for neurodivergent people. We're talking about the educational system. We are talking about the modern workplace. And we are talking about the behavior that is tolerated by far too many people when it's directed towards someone who is not like them.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, there's lots of tools, but awareness, truly awareness, transforms everything. So when we name what happened, the shame loosens its grip. And then when we find community, the isolation fades. Dr. Dodson at the ADHD conference talked about third grade ADHDers, that 70% of them don't have a reciprocal friend. Well, community is everything. Dr. Hallowell says it to himself, right? We know that trauma survivors, war, people in war, as long as they have a community, not as long, but when they have a community, it can change everything. So when we see ADHD not only as a flaw, but as a framework, we can really reclaim our dignity. So healing or work doesn't, and you and I have spoken about this, it doesn't erase the past, but at least it reframes it. And for some, that means revisiting painful memories, but with new understanding. And for others, it's meant learning to set boundaries and saying no, which is so hard with ADHD, I know.
Yes.
But setting those boundaries and saying no without guilt can change everything. It can feel really uncomfortable at first, but when we get uncomfortable or comfortable with uncomfortable, things can change. So for all, it meant realizing that they were never the problem.
Yes. Realizing that you were never the problem is probably the first most important realization to beginning to change things and beginning to realize that, yes, even though you may be able to have tools, you may be able to heal, you may be able to create boundaries and push back and all that. But what's also true is when we know better, we can do better. And sometimes that doing better means removing ourselves from a situation that we could cope with, but choose not to as an act of honoring our self-acceptance. I cannot thrive here. Therefore, I will remove myself from the situation.
Yeah, that's okay. It's not a sign of failure. It's a sign of strength because if you can calm your nervous system and be in a place that honors your strengths and honors your passions and honors your values, you can thrive. And to your point, we're always waiting for the shoe to drop. But if we can stop trying to push through our weaknesses and start living in our strengths, our whole life can change. And I just want to share one quote from the survey that really speaks to what we were just saying, if that's okay.
I'd love that. Yes, of course.
Okay. So one participant wrote, "We were never too much. We were exactly who we were meant to be, just waiting for a world that could understand us."
I want to make that into a poster and a t-shirt and have it printed on my toilet paper so I can see it again and again and again.
Write it on your forehead.
I love that. Oh, maybe a tattoo.
Yeah. It gives you the chills, wow. Right? I don't even remember what I was going to say, because to your point, this really does hit a nerve and disrupts my nervous system slightly. But the reason why I did this survey is because even though it's painful to talk about what happened and continue to rip off the Band-Aid, I know, and the survey results showed it, that so many of us, even in adulthood, are dealing with bullying and victimization today. So I hope that this lands with you. You can recognize if you are being bullied by some of the examples that we shared. And if you are, and you just know that this environment is not going to work with all the help and all the tools, it's okay if you can exit.
Yeah. I think sometimes we just need that permission. It's okay to be different, and it's okay to do different things. And if what you're doing now is not working for your nervous system, maybe coping is not the solution. Maybe honoring your need to thrive is. One more thing before you go. Brooke's survey on ADHD and bullying in adults is still open, and your experience matters to the results. Every person who participates makes the data stronger, and stronger data means this stops being a conversation that only happens quietly between people like us and starts being one that can no longer be ignored. The survey will take less than 5 minutes. I've linked to it in the show notes. Do it for yourself and do it for others. Your voice counts.